This is a download from the BBC. For more information and our terms of use, go to bbc.co.uk/radio3.
A friend of mine, the kind of jet setter who makes flying visits to Pyongyang and drops in on post-conflict Baghdad, once asked me for my favourite African capital, a destination I'd recommend to the most jaded, been-there-done-that explorer. Why, Asmara, the capital of Eritrea, I said. It's funny you should say that, he replied. When I put that question to a few of your colleagues the other night, they all said exactly the same thing. What's so special about this place? Well, I paused. I thought of Eritrea's history, haunted by sacrifice and loss. I thought of the bleak drama of the landscape and the direct conversations one so often strikes up with Eritreans. I thought of its lemon and peach-coloured villas and the faded sophistication of its Italianate avenues. I thought of the periwinkle sky and the alpine crispness of the air. Impossible to capture in one sentence. So I plumped for the flippant. Well, it's the only capital I know which has put up a public sculpture to an item of footwear. African travellers are a snobbish lot. We treasure destinations we feel we have discovered virtually single-handed, forgetting the millions of local residents who have spent their lives in on the secret. Our knowledge is our passkey to a special, private club. When it comes to exclusivity, Asmara has always ticked all the right boxes. For decades, a rebel war against Ethiopian rule cut this beautiful city off from the rest of Africa. Today, 21 years after independence, it has again fallen off the list of recognised destinations. The foreign correspondents whose expressions soften when they talk about Asmara wax so eloquent in part because they know they won't be going back anytime soon. Western journalists are no longer welcome in Eritrea. Like so many African capitals, Asmara exists in its current form because of the grandiose dreams of late 19th century European empire builders, who knew very little about the land they were determined to appropriate. Afraid of missing out on the colonial carve-up of Africa, convinced it needed an outlet for its land-hungry farmers, Italy began nibbling away at the Red Sea coastline. A colony was created in the process of establishing what was only meant to be a toehold on the continent, leading on to bigger and better things. The Italians actually lusted after the fertile lands of Abyssinia, ruled over by Emperor Johannes IV. Instead, they ended up holding Eritrea, a scraggy rind of sweltering coast rimmed by volcanic mountains. The Italians first laid claim to Assab, a Red Sea natural harbour so bleak they didn't have the heart to do much more than anchor there in 1869 and leave. 16 years later, they seized the port of Massawa from Egyptian control. But Massawa is malaria-prone and furnace-hot. The Italians swiftly realised they had to get up into the cool, mosquito-free highlands. Slowly, the Italian troops worked their way up onto the Hamasian Plateau. Where the slope levels out and the land softly undulates, they built their military fort. Up here on the plateau, over a mile above sea level, you can finally breathe easy. Cloud cover is tucked like a soft, white duvet over the distant horizon. The white light slams down with a ruthlessness usually only seen on the ski slope. In the shade, the air is chill, and the moon seems tantalizingly close. Asmara means the women united them. Legend has it that the women folk of four local clans, fed up with being raided by bandits, persuaded their men to put aside their differences and defend the community. The story also goes that the Queen of Sheba, impregnated by King Solomon, gave birth to the first of the great Abyssinian emperors here. In a gesture of colossal cheek, Rome's forces started building their colony's capital on a site that went to the very heart of an African empire's foundation myth. But Asmara's modern appearance was dictated by a second generation of Italian fantasists. The colony of Eritrea was quietly stagnating when Benito Mussolini decided to revive his country's aborted imperial project. "To remain healthy, a country should wage war every 25 years," he announced. The creation of a second Roman Empire, stretching across the Horn of Africa, would invigorate Italy, he argued. Fascist black shirts, regular Italian soldiers and civil servants poured into Eritrea, along with thousands of tons of military material and construction equipment. Eritrea was to serve as a springboard for a second invasion of Abyssinia in 1935, this time successful. Asmara was transformed by this flood of overinvestment. For the Italian architects of the 1920s and 30s, Asmara was a gift. Back on mainland Italy, where medieval piazzas and Renaissance cathedrals dominated city centres, room for manoeuvre was limited. Here, there was space to stretch. Blessed with a huge pool of cheap local labour and the generous patronage of the fascist administration, they could be as daring as they liked. Worshipping the god of speed, these young designers built petrol stations that looked like airplanes in flight, shopping arcades that resembled cruise liners breasting the waves. Asmara became a petri dish for radical experiments in rationalism, modernism, futurism. The relationship between the residents of an independent nation and the legacies of colonialism is always bittersweet, never more so than in Asmara. On the one hand, Eritreans will never forget the humiliations of occupation. On the other, they know that the years of Italian administration were part of the reason why they came to feel they were different from their southern neighbours, and that Ethiopian rule, in the form of Emperor Haile Selassie and Marxist dictator Mengistu Haile Mariam, was simply unbearable. Eritreans don't need a glossy coffee table book celebrating Asmara's architectural wonders to tell them that they live in one of Africa's most beautiful cities, easy on the eye and amenable to the foot. Yet the lion's share of Asmara's elegant palazzos and villas, ministries and government departments, factories and cinemas were built by a fascist regime responsible for a series of obnoxious laws designed to keep white settlers and indigenous locals apart. You could argue that today's Asmara represents a seamless act of peaceful appropriation, a model of how to neutralize past aggression with an embrace. Take the spectacle you can watch each evening on Liberation Avenue, the palm-fringed boulevard down which the EPLF rebel movement triumphantly rolled its tanks in 1991. The city seems to empty onto the street. Gaggles of girls strolling arm in arm flirt with schoolboys. Old men doff their Borsellino hats to grandmothers, wrapped in white cotton shawls to ward off the evening chill. The cafes on the main drag are suddenly full, gadget machines hissing rows of espressos out onto zinc-topped bars. In barber shops, men bare their throats to cutthroat razors, while gossiping friends sit perched behind. Then, equally suddenly, the avenue clears. It is time for respectable citizens to head home for the family meal. Anyone who has ever spent a holiday in a Tuscan hill town will recognise this for what it is, an Eritrean version of the Italian passeggiata. Under fascist rule, Eritreans were supposed to be confined to Asmara's native quarters once they had finished work. They couldn't be served in the cafes with the hissing gadget machines, or sit where they pleased in the cinema, or walk alongside an Italian on the wide pavements. So today's passeggiata is a form of historic vindication. It also happens to be a very agreeable way to spend the golden final hours of any evening. In the ordinary scheme of things, the purity of the concept created by Mussolini's architects would have become muddied in time, as a new generation of ambitious designers bulldozed existing premises to make way for new ideas. Not in Asmara. War, which so often raises beautiful cities, did the opposite here, keeping Asmara safe. From the late 1970s onwards, the conflict between Ethiopia's army and Eritrea's burgeoning rebel movement was fought not here, but far off in the Rora Mountains. There was no development. The Ethiopian administration in Addis Ababa was not going to waste funds on this ungrateful northern province. But very little was destroyed. Landing in Asmara in the years after Eritrea's liberation felt like walking into a sepia-tinted photograph of the 1930s. Italy's legacy was miraculously intact, if decaying. Huge scabs of plaster were peeling from the sides of buildings. Apartment blocks, their pipes leaking water, and their metal shutters rusted shut, cried out for repair. The Fiat bubble cars bowling along the streets were virtually obsolete in Italy itself, as were the fashions advertised in the local hairdresser. One of the EPLF's first constructions was that giant sculpture of the black plastic sandal worn throughout the long separatist war by the rebels. Dirt cheap, easy to repair, the sandal had become a symbol for a Marxist movement that prided itself on its collective decision-making and its popular support. But that was only going to be the start of a major reconstruction program. The new administration drew up bold plans for affordable housing. They were going to need it, not only for the rebel fighters being demobilized, but for members of Eritrea's global diaspora, coming home after the long years of exile. Every street corner in the city seemed to become a building site. Would-be entrepreneurs drew up plans for scuba diving centres, tourist hotels, casinos. Conservationists winced and lobbied the government. Asmara should be recognised as a UNESCO heritage site, they pleaded. It must be protected. They need not have worried. Today, Asmara has returned to its long sleep. It is once again preserved in the aspic of irrelevance. A new war with Ethiopia cracked apart the ruling administration in 2000. President Isaias Afewerki keeps the country on a permanent war footing. The economy has shriveled, and the West has labelled Eritrea a rogue nation. Asmara is certainly one of the safest cities in the world. The chance of being mugged there is on a par with being hit by a comet. But then, police states tend to be very safe, and they also tend not to appeal to tourists. The last time I was allowed in, the words of a frail Italo-Eritrean I had met echoed in my head. The old man was determined to spend his last years there, but was clearly baffled by my interest in the city. Asmara is a good place for people to retire to, he said. But there is nothing here for the young.